Welcome to They Mostly Podcast at Night, episode 262, The Birds.
No podcast you have ever witnessed before has prepared you for such sheer stabbing shock. Did you like that?
Can you do the bird call again? Nice.
I keep thinking like the crows have eyes.
Yes! The crows have eyes three, the groaning. You don't know how badly I wish we could do that movie for this
I
podcast.
I know, that'd be fantastic.
So sad that's not a real movie.
I mean, me too.
Starring Catherine O'Hara. That would be awesome.
Okay. We should just have a different podcast where we just do all the Schitt's Creek episodes, just saying.
Oh my God, that'd be fun, wouldn't it?
And then when we run out of those, we could do like Psych and The Office and Monk, and we'll find like just a different comedy show each year.
Yeah, anyway. Each season could be a different comedy show. Yeah, that'd be fun. That would take a lot of work, though.
Oh, we're not up to that.
Yeah, that would be work.
I don't know, it's my Mangler work. I can't do anymore. I don't have the power. Hi, Cass.
Hi, Carnage.
How was Cryptid Fest?
It was Monster Fest, and it was
damn it
awesome. Okay. So, really fast, Friday night, we watched a premiere. This was put on by the production company Small Town Monsters. They make documentaries about cryptids, like Bigfoot, Nessie, Mothman,
Jersey Devil.
All kinds of things. Jersey Devil, yes.
I remembered.
Yes. There are a million cryptids. I learned about so many more cryptids at this con that I'd never heard of before. But anyway, Friday night was a premiere of their movie at the Capitol Theater in Canton, Ohio. This was On the Trail of Bigfoot, Land of the Missing. This was a collection of interviews of stories of Bigfoot / Sasquatch encounters and folklore from Alaska.
Yay!
Which I thought you would like.
I love Alaska.
Because I know how much you love Alaska.
Yeah, Alaska.
It's interesting because the Bigfoot encounters in Alaska are, by and large, very aggressive, which is unusual. In like, I feel like in the lower 48, and they remarked on this at the movie too, Bigfoot is shy, Bigfoot is curious, Bigfoot doesn't really bother people.
Mm-hmm.
I have heard of like people encountering Bigfoot and being afraid, but Bigfoot not really doing anything to warrant being afraid other than being Bigfoot. But in Alaska, he is known for, like, killing people.
I mean, you go in negative 24 degree weather and you get a little pissy.
I don't blame him. Like, they were like, we don't really know why Bigfoot is so aggressive in Alaska, but I feel it's the cold, yeah.
Trust me, that cold is bitter as fuck.
So it was a very interesting collection of stories. It was darker than their usual fare because, like, Bigfoot, these were tales of Bigfoots, like, killing people.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had a Q&A afterwards with a bunch of people. And my favorite thing of the whole event was this woman who raised her hand to ask a question. And her question was, do you think Bigfoots in Alaska kidnap women to increase their gene pool and avoid incest in their population?
Okay. I don't know where to go with that. Honestly, I'm just kind of dumbstruck.
I don't want to make fun of anyone here, but just the thought of like the Bigfoots getting together as a family and being like, look, Sophie needs a boy, and Harry needs a girl. And if Harry and Sophie get together, we're going to have webbed toes, ladies and gentlemen, and we don't want that. So what do you say we go kidnap some human women?
I mean, it's better than what the royals are doing, so that's how you end up with, like, you know, webbed toes and the royal family and stuff like that. So that makes sense.
I just had never thought of Bigfoot giving thought to the genetic offerings in their population.
Well, I don't believe in Bigfoot anyway.
Yeah.
But if I did, I'd think, is it smarter than a fifth grader? Probably not. It probably wouldn't win at that Jeff Foxworthy show. I'm just saying.
Well, it's interesting because we did have people there who believe that Bigfoot is like an interdimensional being. And that's why people see him, but nobody's ever captured him.
Okay, I need to go now. That's a thought.
This was from a very credible in the community Bigfoot researcher who has been investigating claims of UFOs and Bigfoot and other strangeness.
How did I know Area 51 would come into this?
No Area 51. Okay. This guy has done all of his research in rural Pennsylvania. And
those are Amish, not aliens. There's a difference.
He has been investigating sightings of strange things since the 60s. He even has a hotline to the point where, like, people would call the police and be like, there's a fucking Bigfoot on my land. And the police would call this guy and have him come out with them to interview the people. Like he's not just an investigator. He's, like, the investigator.
Wow.
And this is his theory, that Bigfoots are interdimensional beings. I can't say that everyone at this conference thinks that Bigfoots are interdimensional beings. I feel like there's a good mix of people who just think that he's an undiscovered animal, and then there's people who think that maybe he's from another dimension. I don't know. But anyway, so there were lots of interesting theories out there. Lots of interesting people we met. I was a little worried that, like, we were gonna meet some strange people. Everyone was very nice. Everyone was very accepting. Nobody felt unhinged to me, which is good. Only because the only reason why I was a little bit apprehensive of that is because I have heard a lot about UFO conventions where there have definitely been some interesting people. So I was kind of like, I don't know. I've never met other people who believe in this stuff. So I don't know how it's going to be. You know, so I was a little apprehensive, but everybody was super nice. Everybody seemed very normal, down to earth. They just believe in Bigfoot. You know, I mean.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, that's good then.
And, like, I don't want to make any enemies of my nice friends, but the truth of the matter is that I don't believe in Bigfoot. I just like the stories. I don't sit there and disbelieve everything I hear. I'm just more skeptical. Like, I would like to believe in Bigfoot, but there's a part of my brain that just can't make that last leap into, like, yes, this is absolutely real.
Right.
But I'm not to say that I'm closed off from it. I'm open to it. And I really met some spectacular people that I really enjoyed talking to and that I, you know, like, I would want to be friends with these people. So
did you take our business cards and pass them out? No.
No, but I did tell everybody that I talked to that I had a podcast.
Nice.
They probably won't remember because I didn't have business cards with me. But I talked to a lot of podcasters. And I got to sit in on a couple of, be in the audience of a couple of podcasters that were broadcasting live or recording live mm-hmm. at the event. I specifically got to see Sasquatch Experience. Really loved those guys. Got to talk to them at their table before I saw their podcast recording, and they were super nice and super funny and just really great guys. And then after them was Astonishing Legends, which is a more general, like, they report on, like, any kind of, like, interesting sights, interesting phenomenon, interesting mythology, interesting anything. Anything like kind of like paranormal or supernatural or outside of the normal realm of stuff they talk about. And their episode was mostly just like having audience members come up and tell their like paranormal stories. So we got to hear some ghost stories.
Nice.
And then I didn't get to see him because we wanted to hear a speaker that was going on after Astonishing Legends. But after Astonishing Legends was Jim Harold's Campfire, which was another very popular paranormal podcast. Jim Harold's Campfire is basically like people call in and tell their paranormal encounters. It's like you're all sitting around the campfire telling ghost stories, okay, kind of vibe. It's fun too. But that was, we had VIP tickets, so we were up in the front row, but we had to go see the speaker. And as I was leaving, like, there were just people lined up down the hall for Jim Harold, who's a very popular podcast. Hmm. And people were like so excited that they, you know, people were leaving so they could get the seats, because Astonishing Legends was like, everybody was crammed into this room. Like, all the seats were taken. Anywhere there was a place to stand, there was somebody standing. People were sitting on the floor.
It's my worst nightmare.
Like, your worst nightmare.
Yeah.
Like, somebody, I was talking to somebody afterwards, and they were like, yeah, I saw a little plaque that said that the maximum occupancy for that room was 45 people, and we laughed. Because there was, like, three times the amount of people in that room.
Terrifying.
Yeah. And it was very warm, and there was no airflow, so you would have really hated it.
Yeah.
Because, like, people were, like, sweating. Like, it wasn't so bad in the front, but in the back, like, the woman I talked to, like, she had sweat in her hair. Like, she had been sweating that whole time. And it was the hotel that it was in. Like, I went to the bathroom and their bathrooms were sweltering. I was like, what is going on?
She must not have been on yet or anything.
It was super weird. I expected more from a Hilton. That's all I'm going to say. I mean,
did you though? Really?
It's a Hilton. It's not like it was, you know, a Red Roof Inn. I mean, like, that buffet was $28 a person. I expected more.
Seriously?
Yes.
Jesus fuck.
And they made special dishes based on cryptids. It was cute.
So you guys went to breakfast on?
Lunch, but yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
it was a lunch buffet. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
It was a lunch buffet.
I was like, damn, I haven't been to a $28 breakfast since I was like in Paris or some shit. Like,
no, it was a lunch buffet. But all of the dishes were like cryptid themed. And it was very cute.
That's cool then.
Yeah, it was cool.
It's for the event. Yeah.
And the food was really good too. It was worth the money. So it was very good. But anyway, then there was a big vendor room and I got to talk to tons of people. We just basically talked to everybody. And at first I was really nervous about like, what is this going to be like? Because that's always how I am in new situations. I'm always very nervous because I don't like not knowing what to expect. And I don't like not being prepared for what's going to happen. So, like, the first table we talked to, Mama Chaos was, like, talking for me. You know, like, she has a podcast, and this is what it's about, and blah, blah, blah. And then, like, we got in there, and everybody was super nice and super welcoming, and everybody was just fun to talk to. So I was, by the end of it, I was just telling everybody all about us, and we told our story about the weird sound we heard in the woods.
Oh god, yes, that we talked about last time, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. The bellowing roar. It was funny though, we were at this one table of these two guys who had been in a Small Town Monsters werewolf documentary. And we were telling them about how, like, yeah, like, there were three of us. It was early on a Sunday morning, we're in the park and we hear this huge bellowing roar, and the one guy says, oh, that's probably just a bear. And we were like, okay, creepy, but all right. And we did our walk. And they were like, wait, there was a bear and you went anyway? And we were like, well,
yeah.
Well, yeah, it's just a bear. Like, and so then I told them the story of how, like, we had a black bear in our yard that one day, like, the whole day. He was in our yard and the dogs were going crazy. And I even let the dogs out. And the bear just ignored them. Even though they were going nuts and barking and, like, I couldn't tell what the heck was wrong with them. And then I was leaving for work and the neighbor comes running over to the car like, there's a bear in your yard. And I'm like, what? Oh. And I look and he's pointing and, yeah, there's a bear in the bushes. Like, okay.
It's fine. He's not hurting anything.
I had walked right past it. That bear did not give a crap. That bear was just happy.
Oh, hell no.
Eating berries off our bushes. But yeah. So I was like, yeah, a bear, no big deal, you know? They were like, what? was pretty funny.
It's fine.
This is all fine.
It's okay.
This is all fine. So yeah, like, got tons of cards for artists and podcasters. There were so many creative people there. Authors, podcasters, and tons of artists who made crafts. Like, there was this one, there were a couple people, but specifically this one woman that I really loved talking to. She did needle felting, and she needle felted the cryptids.
Okay.
And they were on stands.
Yeah.
And they were like, maybe like 6 to 8 inches tall.
I've seen some animals like that. I just saw that for the first time, actually.
Yeah.
Like 2 days ago. I'm like, I've never seen such a thing before.
Oh, so that's yeah. Isn't cool. it cool?
Yeah.
And I was telling her, like, yeah, I tried to needle felt once, and I spent like 10 minutes stabbing this piece of wool with a needle trying to make it like into a ball, and my wool would not stick together at all. And I was just like, screw this, you know? So I was like, I'm really admirable that you've done this, like these amazing sculptures out of needle felting, because like it is really hard. And there were like, there was this one artist there who did dioramas.
Okay.
Which was really, like these really elaborate, like created scenes with the cryptids and everything. And there's this one guy, we got a light from him, who made like jars, like with cryptids painted on the jars and then a light inside.
Okay.
Like that
That's
was cool.
Kinda cool.
There were just like so many creative people there. It was really fun.
Was Clara there?
No, I hope she did well. She makes monster art dolls, and she actually would have been perfect for it.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Because she has made, like, Nessie in the past, and I think, like, she's made unicorns, and I think she's even made Mothman a couple times. Mm-hmm. So she would have been really, like, fit in well there. But she was at a different festival in Pennsylvania that day.
Aww.
Which I was... I really hope that went well for her, because she said that show the previous year she had done really well at.
Oh, good.
So okay. I was happy that she was where she was, because she was making that money.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, she totally would have fit in at this place. They would have loved
awesome.
Her. Yeah. They totally would have loved her stuff at this thing. And this was the first year. And it was very crowded. Like, it was very good. There was a very good turnout. It wasn't so crowded that it was like crazy or hard to move. But I was really impressed at their turnout for being the first year of this thing.
That's
so
pretty cool.
I think it's going to continue to grow, and it's going to get really popular. And then that'll be exciting, because then they'll be able to attract like even more speakers and even more podcasts and even more, you know,
that'd
like,
be awesome.
Yeah, it'll be cool. Like, I could see it turning into a multiple day event, but it was just Friday was the movie, and then Saturday was the event, and they were showing movies, they had speakers, and then they had the podcasters going. And that was what I was most interested in, because I'm obsessed with podcasts, and I'm a podcaster, you know, that's my thing, so.
Your jam.
Yeah, that's my jam.
You know, I don't have a jam.
I know you don't have a jam.
I don't have any kind of jam.
You need a jam.
I need a jam. I don't know. Maybe yeah. I don't need a jam.
Everybody needs a jam.
Do we?
Yeah.
All right. I'll find a jam. It'll probably be like cloudberry jam.
What?
It's a real jam, I promise.
What is it called?
Cloudberry.
Cloudberry?
It's Swedish.
It's Swedish.
Is I it saw like Jarvan and IKEA.
Flunkerton or
no, it's really Swedish. It's
it's a kind of jam, you're telling me.
Yes, it's a real jam.
You were being literal.
I was being literal.
Okay. Gotcha.
Literal jam.
Swedish jam. Awesome.
It really is Swedish jam.
All right.
Maybe I'll just be Swedish. Maybe that'll be my jam. Maybe I'll just hang out in IKEAs all day long.
I want to move to Norway. There's a city in Norway where you don't have to have like a visa or anything. You can just move there and
okay.
live and work. And you don't have to...
Are you going to go?
I want to. I would love to. I think it'd be fabulous.
Okay.
And also, college is free
Fine.
In Norway, so I'd definitely
so
go back
go
to
then.
School.
Fine. I'm going. So go then.
So go then. So anyway, let's talk about this movie, because like...
Oh, shit. Yeah, we have a movie to talk about.
Yeah, I've been talking about this
My week
thing.
Was awesome, too. Okay.
Yay.
Let's
Is
move
there
on.
Anything you have to say?
No, I have
I
nothing to say.
Cut
really.
You off or anything.
No, no, no. I had a okay. really boring weekend. So why don't you tell me who we are and what we do, and we'll get into this movie.
Okay. So we are the Mostly Podcast at Night.
Mostly.
We are two best friends of 25 years who bicker and banter our way through a different horror movie each week. We take turns picking the flicks, and a lot of times we argue because we have hashtag friendship goals. Our friendship lives in the hashtag Marianas Trench of Hate, where we MMA style duke it out in our very own octagon. Because we don't see eye to eye on movies. Spoilers ahead and expletives ahead.
That's true. And this week we did The Birds.
The Birds!
Alfred Hitchcock.
Yes.
It was 1963. It was PG-13. It was an hour and 59 minutes long. And it got a 7.6 out of 10 on the IMDb scale. Hit me with that green splotch from Tomato Meter.
The Tomato Meter is certified fresh at a 94%. Critics' consensus, proving once again that buildup is the key to suspense, Alfred Hitchcock successfully turned birds into some of the most terrifying villains in horror history. Audience score, 83%.
You know, it's funny. Can I tell you something real fast before I get to the cast?
Yeah.
My Mama Carnage loves fucking birds. Loves them. Feeds them, buys them grape jelly, goes and gets specialty bird seed. She's got like 500 feeders and 500 hummingbird feeders, and she makes a special hummingbird food at home, and she's got bird baths, and, you know, she loves the fucking birds. Terrified of them. If they ever come near her, she's terrified of them. So she would not watch this movie with me, actually.
She wouldn't watch it.
She would not watch it with me.
Wow.
So I just thought that was funny. I was like, you love birds.
But you're terrified of them. You know, there is something scary about, like one time I was at this person's house and their mother had birds. And when I went over there, one of the birds had gotten out. And when I walked into the door before they could even say, hey, just so you're aware, there's an escaped bird, it flew into my face.
Like Tippy.
Yeah, there is something a little disconcerting about that. I have to say, I was a little bit nervous about having the bird in my hair.
We were at, it used to be called Heather Hill. So it was a hospital in Mayfield. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes. Okay.
I think UH owns it now because UH fucking owns the world, but whatever.
Yeah.
There's like this tunnel and it's got like these windowless windows, if you know what I'm talking about. And it's like got cutouts that look like windows, but they're just open air.
Oh, okay.
And these birds kept flying in the tunnel. My mom was like terrified. She's like, get the birds away from me. This was years ago. It's hysterical. Sorry. I'm mad at her right now, so that's why I'm enjoying her pain and making fun of her mercilessly. So, should we get to cast?
Yeah, let's talk about the cast.
I love this cast.
I do, too. Okay, so Melanie Daniels was the incomparable Tippi Hedren.
As of broadcast date, she's still alive, apparently.
She is.
I'm not going to kill her off. So she was in Marnie, Roar, and The Mulligans.
This was her first role, too. Yes. Alfred Hitchcock actually discovered her in a commercial for a diet drink where a man catcalls her and she looks back at him and smiles because she's so lithe and attractive from this diet drink.
Just like she does in the first scene.
Yes.
It's kind of an homage to that.
It was an homage to that, yes.
She's also Melanie Griffith's mother. Mm-hmm. And Dakota Johnson's grandmother.
Yeah.
So if you're like younger and don't know who Tippi Hedren is, now you know how she's related. Know.
Right.
Look at those Nepo babies she made.
She did.
She made a good Nepo baby.
She definitely did. And she has named, she has a big cat rescue. She's an animal rights activist. And she started her big cat rescue after she was in a movie in 1971 when she found out that the big cats that were in the movie really didn't have anywhere to go afterwards and were going to end up like languishing in small cages. And she didn't want that to happen. So she started a big cat sanctuary for them.
She didn't change her name to Carol Baskin, did she?
She did not.
Okay, good.
Did you know they found that guy? Carol Baskin's husband. He did not get fed to the tigers after all.
He's alive?
He is alive and well.
Wow.
Yes.
Didn't really watch Tiger King a whole lot.
Oh,
so
well.
I just, you know a little bit from it.
Okay. Well, I did. And I was involved in a Facebook community about it a little bit. And the prevailing rumor was that Carol Baskin fed her first husband to the tigers.
Well, I remember that because of the song. Carol Baskin killed her husband. There was like a TikTok song.
Yeah.
It was a whole dance thing. So I didn't know that part.
But they did end up finding that guy. He is alive and well.
Hiding.
She did not actually kill him. He just lives in South America with his wife.
Nice.
Who is not her. Anyway, I just thought, you know, clear the air about Carol Baskin because like everybody loves to hate on Carol Baskin. The woman did nothing wrong. But anyway. I could go into a whole thing about Tippi Hedren, but
no, you gotta keep going.
Well, I was just gonna say, like, then, like, she made a movie with her husband that Melanie Griffith was in. I can't remember what it was called. And they all sustained injuries from big cats. Melanie Griffin was hurt pretty badly. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the name of the movie. It was like Roar or something like that.
Yeah, that's Roar.
Is it Roar?
Okay. Yeah, that's one I listed.
Okay. Okay. So, yeah. Read about Roar if you're interested, because there was a lot of injuries on the set of Roar, and Melanie Griffith is lucky to be alive. She also unfortunately had her career cut short by Alfred Hitchcock because she would not sleep with him. So Tippi Hedren really got the shaft on her career because she had integrity and would not go to bed with Alfred Hitchcock. So Mitch Brenner was Rod Taylor.
Aussie. He was in Inglourious Basterds, The Time Machine, and the original 101 Dalmatians.
Nice.
Yes.
Lydia Brenner was Jessica Tandy.
From the Oscar award winning, where she got an Oscar for Driving Miss Daisy, Oscar nominated Fried Green Tomatoes, and the 80s favorite Batteries Not Included.
I never saw Batteries Not Included, but I am a huge Fried Green Tomatoes fan.
Fucking love Fried Green Tomatoes.
I loved the book. I read the book.
Tawanda!
I loved the book and I loved the movie.
Fuck, we probably blew out the levels when we just did that, didn't we?
We did. That's okay. As long as we don't do it all the time, okay. It's all right.
All right.
But they'll just have to forgive us for blowing out the levels because Tawanda,
fucking love that movie.
Uh-huh. Kathy Brenner was Veronica Cartwright.
Who we love from Alien, The Witches of Eastwick, and Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yes, yes. That's, which is another movie that we really have to do for this show.
Yes. She and Tippi are the only ones alive still from this cast.
Yes.
Sad.
Annie Hayworth was Suzanne Plachette.
I loved her in The Bob Newhart Show, but she was also in The Lion King and Will and Grace.
Yes, she was... As we were discussing how she was in The Bob Newhart Show, Mama Chaos and I was like, she was like, oh yes, Bob Newhart always had pretty wives. I'm like, yeah, that dumpy little man, he always had pretty wives. But she is beautiful. Mm-hmm. I just absolutely adore her. And, and I had an honorable mention.
Okay.
So in the beginning when Tippi goes to deliver the lovebirds to Mitch's apartment, she meets a man who is Mitch's neighbor who tells her, like, he's not there and kind of gets the whole plot going. That is Mel Blanc. He was on the Dick Van Dyke Show.
Oh, he was also the voices of, like, Bugs Bunny and all sorts of stuff, too.
Yes, yes, yeah, he was. I just knew him. I mean, I knew him, obviously, because I watched Bugs Bunny growing up, but I knew of him. I didn't really know who did Bugs' voice when I was a kid, but I watched a lot of Nick at Night, and so, therefore, I saw a lot of the Dick Van Dyke Show where he was a staple.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I recognized him right away.
Strange Brew?
Yes, yes,
he was the dad in that, too.
Yes, yes, yeah. He was, yes.
I have an honorable mention, too, that I didn't list here, but that's okay. The guy, when Tippi gets hit by the seagull, he's in the boat, and he's like, are you okay? That is actually the owner of the diner that they were at, the restaurant that they filmed at.
Oh.
His name was Mitch, and he said they could use the restaurant for free as long as he got... the lead character was named after Mitch, and he got one speaking line.
Oh, nice.
So Alfred Hitchcock agreed, and that's how they get to use the restaurant for free.
I love it.
So, a little trivia. Do you want a little summary?
I would love one of Carnage's famous five-second summaries.
Birds and things went awry.
Yes. So yeah, really interesting because, like, you never find out why the birds have done what they've done, and you never find out if they stopped or not. Like, did this eventually stop and be just a weird phenomena that happened, or was it like the beginning of the apocalypse? We don't know.
It's kind of like The Happening. Will it happen again? Although with birds, not trees. And not with Mark Wahlberg. What? No.
No, ma'am. So, should we get into this movie?
Yes, get into this movie, because we have already been going for, like, a bit.
Half an hour, yeah.
Yeah, we need to get into the movie.
Yeah, so let's power through this. It's 2 hours long, but I'm going to do my best to not get too stuck into...
I'm going to move you along.
Yeah, okay. So, we start out in a bird store. Tippi Hedren, she shows up. looking for a mina bird. And we meet Mitch when he comes in looking for lovebirds. And he pretends like he thinks that she works there. So she goes along with it because she wants to like prank him or something.
And she's a big pranker. And that's how he knows her, is that he's a lawyer.
Right.
And she was busted for a prank, something with windows or...
She broke a plate glass window.
Yeah. She's like...
And he's like, you belong in jail. And I'm like, whoa, that's a little extreme, but okay. So yeah, she is a big prankster. So they kind of prank each other.
Yes.
And she pretends to be a store clerk and he's asking her all these questions about birds and she's trying to act like she knows what she's talking about and he's kind of like, yeah, you don't know what you're talking
about.
Those
are red birds.
Yeah.
Strawberry finches. We call them red birds too.
Yeah. So funny. So then he's like, the jig is up and he's like, I know you. And she's like, no, you don't.
I got to say real fast, too. I love the reason why she was getting the mina bird, because I always thought she was getting it for herself. And then I rewatched this movie last night. She was getting it for her aunt, who's prim and proper. She was going to teach it some words.
Yes, she was going to teach it bad words. Yes, always the prankster. Yes.
Which I just thought that was funny.
Hilarious. Well, it turns out that I talked to a woman who fosters birds, like parrots and things, for like to be rehomed, and it turns out it's a lot harder to rehome the ones that swear. So they don't like to teach them to like they. You're not supposed to swear around them because you don't want them to pick up swear words because it's harder to adopt them out if they swear, which is funny. But this woman was complaining because she told her father-in-law who was staying with them at the time, like, don't swear around the bird. We have to rehome this bird and it'll make it much harder to get him adopted if he swears. And the father-in-law promptly taught the bird how to swear.
Nice. Love it.
Yes. And she was bemoaning about this fact because she was really concerned about finding this bird home. And funnily enough, all these people were like, I'll take a bird that swears. I think that's hilarious. So he did end up getting adopted.
That's great.
But yeah, just a little fun fact about birds that swear. Yeah, I love that she was going to do this. It's just hilarious.
Well, Mitch, when the gig is up, he leaves without the birds.
Yeah.
So she decides, you know what? They need birds. Kathy needs birds, his little sister.
His little sister for her birthday, yeah.
So she goes and finds, using her dad's connection, because her dad owns the newspaper, finds out by using his license plates who he is and where he lives.
Yeah.
Awesome abuse of power.
I know.
Love that.
She finds out that he, she goes to his apartment. She runs into Mel Blanc, who says, I'm his neighbor, and he's gone. He stays the weekends in Bodega Bay. And so she goes to Bodega Bay.
An hour plus away.
Yeah.
For a prank.
For a prank.
Like, she goes to extremes for this prank.
She does. She really does. And I love that about her, honestly. So she shows up at Bodega Bay at the post office with these lovebirds, and she's like asking all these questions about Mitch. Finds out where his farm is, his mom's farm that he goes and stays at. Finds out where the daughter goes to school so that she can ask the school teacher what her name is.
A town this small, and they don't know what the kid's name is. I mean, come on. Seriously? Talk about adults not caring about kids at all.
Well, not even not caring about kids, but they're just like, well, no, they don't even ask like why she wants to know. She's a complete stranger. They don't ask why she wants to know what this minor child's name is. They're like, oh, just go talk to the school teacher.
What was the 60s?
So, I know. It's just
like,
hilarious.
It's fine. She's not
going to
steal the kid.
Like, I understand.
Even though she wants a secret, you know, she wants to surprise them.
Right, yeah.
If it was a guy that was like, well, I really want to find a back wing because I want to surprise them. By the way, what's the kid's? That might be a little more suspicious.
Yeah, it might be.
Just saying.
But I know it was a different time and everything, and she was a woman, so they weren't as worried about
it. She was an attractive woman who drove an Aston Martin and wore a fur coat.
Yes.
And, oh, God, clip-on pearls, which I hate, but that's a whole other story. I can't stand the clip-on earrings in this, but that's another story. So.
Well, you know, that was also very common
back then.
I know. Can't mar your body with, like, the devil's piercing. Anyway, yeah, and I love... So then she charters, like, a little fishing boat so that she can... drive it, because of course she knows how, across the bay.
You know how to use an outboard motor? Of course.
Yeah. She's like, doesn't everybody?
What the fuck?
I don't know. Hops in her fur coat, which she got to keep.
Mm-hmm.
Although Hitch charged the production company for it, so yeah.
Somebody paid for it.
Somebody paid for it, but she did get to keep it. She drove it across the bay to the house, walks right into his open front door, which...
It was not open. It was just unlocked.
It was unlocked. Not open. Well, it wasn't. It was unlocked. Yeah. That equals open to me. Yeah, just walks into his house, puts down the birds with a note, and leaves again. And then she gets in her boat and drives away a little bit so that she can, like, hide and watch and see him discover the lovebirds, which he does. And so then he's like, what the hell? So he goes back out and he's got binoculars and he spies her in the boat in her fur coat peeking over the edge of the boat at him. And he's just like, okay. And he's like, hey. So she's like, oh, hi. Like, she's trying to get the boat to go, but it doesn't go. Like, the engine doesn't start right away. So she gets caught. And, so she gets the boat going and she heads off. So he jumps in the car and drives back into town to intercept her when she gets to the dock. And as she gets to the dock, this gull comes out of nowhere and, like, clips her on the head. She gets a cut on her forehead. And the diner owner pops up and goes, Miss, are you okay? And he comes to, like, help her out and take care of her cut. And it's his son.
Yeah, they take him into the restaurant where we meet the mother who just immediately takes a dislike to her.
Yeah.
Immediately.
It's just like, oh, this bitch.
But I would be, like, looking at her coat and her go, like, marry my son.
Yeah.
Take care of me forever. It's right. Fine.
I know. Like, you're obviously rich. Get over here and meet my son. But instead, she's just like, get thee behind me, Satan. And Mitch insists on having her up to the house for dinner to say thank you for the birds.
Well, she was only at a stay to drop off the birds, but she met Annie, who has a room to rent.
Right.
And she lies to Mitch and says, well, I'm here for the week. I'm here for the night.
I'm here for the weekend.
I'm going to visit my friend Annie.
I'm visiting my friend Annie. And he's like, how do you know Annie? Because she doesn't know that he and Annie are like besties. And she's like, oh, you know, we went to college together. And he's like, okay, if you say so. So come to have dinner with us. So he, like, kind of doesn't let her refuse. And she's like, all right, fine. I'll come have dinner with you.
Gets, like, a nightcap from the general store and rents Annie's room for one night.
Yeah. Oh, it's hilarious.
And Annie's, like, suspicious. Like, she's been in love with Mitch and she's let him go. But she's like, of course you're here for Mitch.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like, Mitch is handsome. Mitch is a lawyer. Of course you're here for Mitch. And, so she goes up to dinner and Lydia, the mother, hates her.
Kathy loves her.
But Kathy loves her. Kathy is so excited to get these birds and she's just enamored with Melanie from the moment she sees her. It's like she's got a little crush. It's so cute. And Veronica Cartwright, an adorable child.
Yes.
So cute as Kathy. She was just perfectly cast. She was in Lost in Space. Did you mention that?
No, I didn't. I forgot about that
one. And her younger sister played her younger sister in Lost in Space.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were the Robinson. They were Will Robinson's sisters.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so she stays for dinner and then she goes back to Annie's for the night. And it's funny because she just walks into Annie's house and Annie's like, oh, Melanie, is that you? Like,
who the fuck else would it be?
Who would be walking into your house, lady?
It was a different time. Yeah, and that's when they hear the next strike of a bird, which is a seagull. They hear a thud, and it's this dead seagull that rammed right into the door.
Yeah,
very. So that's strike number two.
Yeah. She's like, who could be here at this hour? And she just opens the door instead of being, like, afraid. And
it's the 60s. You're not afraid in the 60s.
That's right. And it's a seagull. And they're just like, oh, that's weird. Okay. So, like, Kathy and Annie, mostly Kathy, convince Melanie to stay for Kathy's birthday party.
Mm-hmm. And strike number three.
Strike number three, yes.
The birds truly do attack this time, and not just one person. Like, there's a swarm of them.
I love how much it's, like, there's so much, like, child endangerment in this
movie. I love it. I know.
Isn't it great? Like, the birds attack children so much, and it's great.
That's who they attack first in swarms, though. I mean, that's great. Yes. That's, they're like little people. Okay, we'll take them.
They start, like, Mitch and Melanie are having, like, this little talk about Melanie's mother and how she's not just a prankster. And it's like, whatever. And then the gulls attack the kids playing games. And so they get all the kids inside.
Mostly.
Well, this one girl's like laying on, like face down on the ground.
These kids are so fucking
funny. Oh, it's hilarious.
They don't even try to get the birds off
them. No, they don't.
They're just like, attack me.
Well, yeah, they just lay there while the birds attack them. And like the adults have to come and shoo the birds away and carry them inside.
And they used some puppets, but a lot of them were real birds. Mm-hmm. And certain scenes too, where they have the birds attached to like Tippi. Like, by thread, so they can't get away from her. And, like, there was one that was purposely mean to Rod Taylor. Like, it would attack him every morning, would bite him every morning. Like, these were real birds, like, yeah. A lot of them. And, yeah, they were on a lot, usually, like a steel lot, because Alfred Hitchcock hated shooting on location. But, I mean, how fucking trained can these birds be?
I know.
Oh, my God. Did you read about what they did with the kids, too? Mm-mm. Okay. I'm jumping ahead just a little bit.
Okay, that's fine.
So, because you're going to talk about this too. So, it happens at the blah blah blah. Happens at the birthday party. We move ahead. We find a farmer dead.
Yeah,
his eyes packed out. Okay. The birds attack these kids at the school.
Yes,
and we're going to talk a little bit about that. But they had to reshoot some of it, and they put these kids on these treadmills. And had the birds, like, attacking them and the studio lot. And they, like, didn't care about the kids at all. The kids would, like, fall flat in their flays. And they just keep going. These poor fucking kids.
These poor kids.
I think this is before, like, child labor laws for studio. Mm-hmm. Like, just keep going.
Well, I know. Well, that's, like, I mean, we'll talk about it when we eventually do The Exorcist. But, like Linda Blair.
Mm.
Oh my God. She was injured all the time in that movie. And they did not care.
No.
Like, most of those screams were her in real pain. And they're just like, keep shooting.
It's great.
It's so messed up. But yeah. So the next day, Melanie goes to the diner and she's talking to her dad on the phone, telling him about the attack. And they're in the, this diner and all these people are around and all these people start like, weighing in with what?
The school gets attacked first before the diner.
Oh, they do?
So you want to talk about that song?
Yes. Okay, so Tippi goes to the schoolhouse the next day. And she's waiting. While she's like waiting for the class. And the kids are singing this obnoxious song that I freaking hated. But more than that, there was something unsettling about it that I just couldn't pick my finger on. It's mostly just like nonsense words. It doesn't make a lot of sense. So when I was watching it this time, I had to look up the song because I was like, what is the song they're singing? It is such a weird song for them to be singing. Did kids normally sing the song? Like, what the hell? So I looked it up. It's an Americanized version of a Scottish folk song called, let me get there. The Americanized version is called Rizzledy Rozzledy. Or Rizzle-T, Rozzle-T, doesn't matter, both, interchangeably. But the original song is Wee Cooper O' Fife, and it's all about a man beating his wife.
Wonderful.
Wonderful. Now, obviously, the Americanized version does not have a man beating his wife, but it's basically about a wife who won't work, and then he beats her for it. There's the original lyrics of the Scottish lyrics, but... if you've ever heard a Scottish person speak, it's hard to understand what they are saying. And even when they write out their words in English, it's like, and nay mare think, oh my gowden ring. What the hell is that? I don't know. So I'm not going to read the words. But it says, the close of this traditional composition even appears to offer the Cooper services to other husbands, should they too find themselves suffering the strains of a gentle wife unwilling to work. Wonderful.
Love it.
So eventually this got changed into a song that for some reason children actually sang in school. Yes, I read. They actually did. And they put in a bunch of nonsense words to replace like the Scottish slang, because obviously Americans don't understand that. I don't understand that. So, but so it became like Rizzlety Rozzlety, and it's about a woman who won't sweep the floor because brooms are dear, and she combs her hair but once a year, and the husband asks her to do something, and she shows him the door. She's like, get the fuck out. So, but the person who changed the lyrics up and wrote this composition that appears in the movie actually heard of the song because his son sang it in school. Mm. And he got the words from the school teacher, which he then fiddled with for Hitchcock's liking. And they sing this song specifically because it's an awkward song for children to be singing, and it's supposed to be hinting at the weird relationship of the people in this movie, and it's just supposed to add to the unsettling nature of this movie.
Well, it unsettled me for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Even when I was just like, okay, this is a nonsense song and the lyrics are really annoying, but it's unsettling too. Like, something about it is just strange. Like, so yeah, that was enlightening. Oh, yes. Wee Cooper O'Fife.
So the kids run away. They get attacked. It's Crate again. This is where the treadmill comes in. The lovely kids just... Ah, it's so fantastic. Melanie leaves Kathy with Annie, mm-hmm. and goes to the cafe. And it's when we see her on the phone with her father. Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's when another bird attack happens at the gas station.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. And this guy, he, like, doesn't see this. I don't remember. How did the gasoline get out?
It knocked him down. He had the hose in his hand and it knocked him down.
Okay.
And the hose just keeps running. Like, these guys come running over to help this guy. No one thinks to pick up the fucking gas hose, yes. and turn it off. Like, the gas hose is still just streaming down the street.
Yeah, it's just flowing down the street. And they're all yelling, like, watch out, watch out, watch out. And this guy, like, casually lights a cigarette and flicks the match into the fucking river of gasoline, mm-hmm. going down the street.
Yes, that's fantastic.
And you even get like an aerial shot of this as well. First, like you watch the fire travel from the car across the street to the gas station where it fucking explodes, which is awesome. And then we get like a pullback aerial shot of mm-hmm. the line of fire going to the gas station and in this little town.
Sorry, that gas station would have blew. Like, yeah. It would have blown. Let's be honest. It wouldn't have been like a little fire.
Half the town would have been on fire.
You got the firefighters firing the fire, mm-hmm. and trying to fight the birds off at the same time. And mm-hmm. the birds come in swarms again. And this is where you get that iconic Melanie in the phone booth shot. Yeah. Yes. Before Mitch saves her.
Yes.
Yeah. And then they head back to the diner where the people are hiding in the hallway because yes. the ornithologist said, no, birds don't attack people. That's not right.
Well,
the
old lady. Technically, she's true.
Well, they did, though.
But they did. Yes.
Trees don't attack people either, but they do, apparently.
Well, there are really trees that do that. But that's the crazy part. But anyway, so yes, and this is where the one like very tightly wound lady accuses her of being evil.
Yes, they didn't come until you came in town. Yeah, sure, it was her fault. She brought the birds from San Francisco. You didn't have birds here before. You know, she's like, I trained them how to attack you bitches.
Yeah, right. Like,
she's a witch. She's a witch.
They're attacking her too, but okay. But yeah. So that's a fun scene. And
sad part, though, after those.
Yeah, what happens?
When they go to pick up Kathy from Annie's.
They go to pick up Kathy from Annie's house, and Annie's just, like, dead on the walk up to her house.
Suzanne Plachette said she talked to Alfred Hitchcock about doing some crazy ear where the ear is partly torn off, and they actually put her through makeup for it, and then he ended up not shooting it anyway, just to screw with her.
Nice.
Because that was his sense of humor, apparently.
What a guy. So yeah, they're like, oh my gosh. And Melanie's trying not to look. And Mitch is like, oh God, and he's dead. And then they see Kathy's just sitting, like standing in the window, like trying not to cry hysterically. So they collect Kathy and put her in the car and they're driving back up to the farm. And Kathy's telling them like, she shoved me back in the house and they attacked her. Cause I was like, Like, she tells them, like, there was, like, they heard something at the door, so Annie goes and opens the door.
Yeah. You think, come on.
Like, come on, lady.
Oh, we totally forgot about the night before. Between the birthday party and the school.
We kind of rushed past it.
I know.
Yeah.
Melanie's having dinner with them, and all these sparrows. Are they sparrows, right?
Yeah.
Flew through the chimney and, like, just attacked the whole house.
Yes.
The whole Brenner house. I forgot about that part. And then Lydia finds the body of the farmer, and then she's catatonic after that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And now they take young Kathy back to the house, and they board up the house,
mm-hmm.
and the birds still get through.
They do. They actually, like, make a hole in the ceiling.
Yeah, they peck through the roof.
And they peck through the roof, and they come in that way. And for some reason, Melanie, like, hears noises. And so she goes to investigate. Like,
no. What's even worse is she sees the birds, and instead of backing slowly out the door, she closes the door behind her.
Yeah. That was dumb.
Yeah. Well, that was a whole climatic scene. And that's where they had the birds actually attached to her, too.
Right.
So.
Yeah. And they were attacking her. And she was, like, talking to Mitch.
He wasn't even there.
He wasn't even there, but that's like that's like how hysterical she was. She was just talking to somebody who wasn't even there. And Mitch, like, eventually finds her, and she's, like, blocking the door, so he has to, like, shove her with the door, like, shove her out of the way so he can get into the room and save her. She's really been through the ringer in this movie, let me tell you.
Poor Tippy.
Yeah, poor Tippy. Do you know if she got hurt?
Yeah. She got a gash in her
head. I assume she did, yeah. With the way they had the birds literally tied to her.
Yeah, yeah. She got a gash.
Okay, yeah, I figured.
I want to say it needed stitches, but I don't remember, so. Yeah. Oh, yeah. She was... there's a part where Rod Taylor is... Rod Taylor is actually carrying down her double because she was in the hospital for a week.
Oh.
After that scene in the bedroom, because she was just so traumatized from it, supposedly. There's mixed stories. Like, she was saying, well, I was actually hurt. And people are like, no, she wasn't hurt. She was just so traumatized from it that she had to be well for a week. So who knows what's actually happened. But yeah, that's actually not her that Rod's carrying.
Wow. Okay.
He's carrying her stunt double.
Okay.
Which, why wouldn't you use the stunt double in the actual stunt? What the fuck ever?
Yeah, I know. Like, tie the birds to the stunt double. She can handle it. but, yeah, I don't know. Okay. So I had a feeling she was hurt. Yeah. Because, I mean, it just sounded like a recipe for disaster right there. So it ends with they all pile into the car, and the birds are just sitting. They're, like, all along the telephone poles. They're perched on every available perch outside. They're all just, like, crowded into the yard, like, just every available space is taken up by a bird, and they are headed out to try to get Melanie to the hospital, and that's where the movie ends.
Yeah.
So, like, it leaves you with a very ambiguous ending of, like, is this gonna continue on? Is it gonna stop? We don't know.
Very
ominous, yes. Which I read the short story when I was in school before I saw the movie. And so I loved the ending because the ending was very much like that too, where it was just like there was a pause in the attacks, but they didn't know if it was over or if it was going to keep happening or what was going on. They had no answers, which I liked.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
I agree. But the book was drastically different, though. I mean, it was just a guy... in a cottage.
Yeah.
With his family.
Yeah.
And he was the only one left at the end, too.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was very just, will he survive? Won't he survive?
Yeah. You don't know.
They were supposedly were, they had not, the sexual advances didn't start up during the birds between him and Hotchkiss. It was the Marnie.
It was Marnie.
Although it was repeated that. But they were saying she got injured in the telephone booth incident, too. Cuts to her face from a pan of glass shattered on her. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Marnie was when their relationship went south.
Yeah.
And he was very jealous that she was taking other acting roles. Like, she was supposed to be exclusive to him or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then he started.
7-year contract.
Yes. And he didn't want her working for anyone else
mm-hmm.
because he was so obsessed with her and he wanted her and no one else was allowed to have her. And she was up for a bunch of roles and he was telling people, oh, she's not available. She's not available. And so she didn't get the roles.
Mm-hmm.
Even though she was available, he was just being a dick because she wouldn't sleep with him.
Ass.
Yeah.
He even tortured Melanie because he gave her when she was sick, he gave her a doll in quotes, that was looked just like her mother in like a coffin.
Oh God, he's fucked up.
Yeah. So, that's all I have.
She's not the only actress that he was very inappropriate with.
Oh, I'm sure not.
But, he basically ended her career.
Well, she still does films. I mean, she still does. But not as big as she could have been bigger.
But there was a long period where she didn't get roles.
Yeah.
And she kind of concentrated on her Big Cat Sanctuary and, like, turned her focus elsewhere because she was having such a hard time getting work. Right. And she has done things since then.
She's so beautiful.
Yeah.
She really was. I mean, mm-hmm. She's even prettier than Melanie and Dakota are. So pretty. What else do you want to say about this movie?
I love it. Mm-hmm. I'm always torn because I really do love Hitchcock's films, even though he was an asshole. Mm-hmm. And I hate the way he treated his leading ladies, but they were amazing. I mean, he was a good judge of talent.
Women were treated so differently back then.
They were.
I mean, this is 60 years prior to the Me Too movement. I mean, it's... Yeah. Casting couch was a real fucking thing.
Yeah.
You know, and they did destroy... Like, look at Harvey Weinstein, how many, careers he tried to destroy. Mm-hmm. And he was 40 years later. So yeah. It's not surprising at all, honestly.
No, I mean, it's a real shame. Yeah. It really is. It's terrible. But it happened. It mm-hmm. really happened. And women were just treated... like things, like as always, unfortunately. Yeah. Things are getting better, but things were really, really rough, and they're not even where they should be now. They're just better than they were.
But
Tippi Hedren is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
This movie is awesome.
Jessica Tandy was awesome.
Always loved Jessica Tandy. She has such a presence about her. All the actors, such good casting, excellent actors, terrific suspense. I mean,
and the story moved smoothly.
It did. It moved very smoothly.
And you get to know the characters. It's
to
kind of like your perfect film.
Yeah, it really is. Like there's a good story. There's really good. Everybody has motivations. They're mm-hmm. all three-dimensional characters. There's no like gaping plot holes. The answers, the questions that they give you are not there because it was lazy storytelling. They were crafted to be that way to make a good story.
Right.
That's a big difference. I will say, I have to bring it up, Birdemic.
God, I hate you.
The software engineer who got rich when his company was bought by a bigger company, and he decided to start making films, and he wanted to make an homage to the birds, so he created Birdemic. The main character's name is Rod, after the actor who played Mitch.
Mm-hmm.
The love interest's other leading character, the leading lady, her name is Natalie, after Tippi's real first name. And... if you want to see the worst movie possible,
God,
you should check out Birdemic. The CGI birds are the most terrible things I've ever seen. The CGI is so terribly bad, and the birds hover the way birds don't.
It's so horrible.
They are turkey vultures and eagles. And they have the sound of high-pitched squealing seagulls that really gets annoying. The first half of the movie is all about this software guy whose company gets bought by Oracle, and he makes it rich. And then he meets a Victoria's Secret model, and they start dating. And it is fucking laughable.
It's unwatchable.
It is hilarious.
It's unwatchable.
So bad. I suggest if you want to watch it, do yourself a favor and watch the Riff Tracks version, which has jokes over the movie, people making jokes over the movie. That's a lot more palatable. You can watch it for free without having to have a Riff Tracks subscription. That's a much more palatable way to ingest the film.
But barely.
But it's hard. I watch the movie all the time because I love bad movies. Carnage can't even watch it. I don't even try to make her.
After the first time you tried to make me.
Right. Because it was clear how painful you found that movie. So I was like, I'm not going to push this. But I did try to make you watch it once because I have to share things I love. The fact that there are two sequels is even scarier. God.
We'll come to that next time. Should we rate? Yeah.
Let's rate. I'll go first since it was my pick. I am going to give this movie a 9. Solid 9. I just think it was so excellently crafted. And it's one of my favorites. I love the classics. As everyone knows, that's my kind of horror. I love a good story. I love a well-crafted narrative. I love suspense. And I thought it was very successful. Daphne du Maurier wrote the story. She also wrote Rebecca, which is another Hitchcock movie, mm-hmm. Which I also love and will probably do eventually.
Yes. Probably soon.
Yeah, that would be fun. Mm-hmm. I love Rebecca. I love Rebecca. So yeah, 9.
I'm close-ish. I'm at 8.521.
Yeah, that's close.
So pretty close. I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I would. When you and I watched it, was the first time I'd ever seen it. Mm-hmm. And then I watched it again. I enjoyed it even more this time. So
cool.
I was happily surprised. It flowed. I'm not really much for older movies sometimes, unless it's like a musical, because those keep me entertained. But this actually kept me very entertained, and I enjoyed it.
I'm glad. I'm glad you liked it. Yeah. I wasn't sure how you felt about it, so I'm glad you liked it.
And we have fan fiction. There are 8 on Archive of Our Own, so go check them out.
Nice.
They're mostly just not crossovers, although there's one that's crossed over with Sons of Anarchy, which is just weird. But go check it out.
My mouth has hit the table.
It has. But it wasn't Ed and Eddie, though. It was Sons of Anarchy. So,
that's just like the most random thing you could have said. I mean, what the hell? But awesome. I'm here for it. Yeah. The weirder the better in my book.
Yes. Should we pimp and get the fuck out?
Sure. We are part of the Morbidly Beautiful Podcast Network. MorbidlyBeautiful.com is your place for all things horror. And they have an amazing podcast network. So if you're looking for other horror shows, give it a listen. We'll have a link in the show notes to all of the shows on the network, and definitely check those out because they have some amazing shows in their network that we are proud to be part of. So we are on all the social medias. If you want to interact with us or get news and updates from us, we are at Podcast at Night everywhere. We have an Instagram, a Facebook group, a Twitter, a Good Pods, and a Slasher. Although I am bad about remembering to post on Slasher, but Slasher's cool. It's all horror, so yay. We also really appreciate reviews. Doesn't have to take more than 5 minutes. Just wherever you listen, give us a rating if you can. Write a few nice words. We're very appreciative. And we also have a merch store if you're interested. That'll be linked in the show notes with everything else that gets linked in the show notes. And that's it from me, Chaos. So I'll just say thank you for listening and stay bloodthirsty, friends.
Good night from Carnage. And as always, we are filmed in front of a live studio audience of inquisitive little kitties. Well.
Aww.